All right. Hello, everybody. Today I have a special guest. I will let him introduce himself.
Hi there. My name is Vyacheslav. I am a tech artist working in the game dev industry for nearly 7 years.
Wow. 7 years.
Yeah. 7 years, but not all of them are tech art role specific. I started as a game tester, a junior game tester, to be precise. But I'd like even to make a step one way before and explain how I reached it altogether, because
Sure.
I was preparing during my lifetime in university. I was prepared for being an aviation engineer.
What?
It is something, yes, it is something I have passion about. I mean, you can imagine the big metal stuff which flies off the ground.
Yeah.
Reaches the altitude of 10,000 meters and within a few hours safely lands to another part of our planet,
yeah.
which is something like wow.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to take part of it. I studied this topic in college and in university, and then I spent 1 year working as actually an aviation engineer.
Wow.
We were designing the cockpits.
Oh.
The inside of the heart, the brain of the plane.
Yeah.
And we were creating the test benches where we established the replica of the real cockpit and were testing different parts, like how they behave maybe after the maintenance or maybe ejecting some new parts, you know. So we were like a test department, but for the aviation.
That's so cool.
Yes, and I really loved that approach, but I don't want to say badly about that company. It's a huge company with a really great story behind, but I believe the best years have passed already for them. It's Antonov company, and
of course.
I was struggling to increase my level of expertise. People there were staying and keeping their thoughts with them, like that might prevent them from being fired, you know.
Or replaced. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So I started to look for something which also drives me. And for the whole life, it was game, a particular game, World of Warcraft.
Oh.
I mean, I've spent years there. It's hard to admit, but yeah, it's been quite a while. So I do love games. And for joining as a junior game tester, the requirements were pretty simple: to love games and to have a basic awareness of testing approach whatsoever. So both of them were checked. So I pretty easily joined the AAA company, and yeah, started working there since then and till nowadays. Within nearly 2 years, I received an incredible opportunity to get a mentor for a TA, it was, I believe, 9 months
wow.
of intense internship.
Mm-hmm.
We covered all the hard skill topics for the TA, and they were nearly general, but still.
Just a little bit for the viewers who don't know what a TA is. It's a technical artist.
Technical artist, yes.
Yeah.
I will use this acronym
further
on. It's,
yeah.
Or tech art, maybe. Tech art is,
yeah.
is better, yeah. So yeah, 9 months, they were successfully completed. And since then, I'm on my journey for technical artist, still learning new things in
wow.
this endless skill set, you know. For Deckard, you cannot know everything,
yeah,
especially at once.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's a very generalist scope. Like, there's a lot of skills to learn, and it just never ends. And what a great opportunity to learn something in an internship for 9 months. And you mentioned it was intense. How did you find that?
It was intense in a way that I was not like intern TA. I was still delivering my main responsibilities as a game tester and was learning at the same time in parallel. So that's why I call it intense, because I used to wake up 4 5 a.m. every day within that time frame, including my weekends. And I also live quite far from the office, so it takes me more than an hour to commute in one way, and I use that time as well in the public transport to watch some videos, to read some articles. And that was also quite beneficial for me, because at home we have I had a family back in the days already, so there were some responsibilities there, and
wow.
1 hour in one direction is also quite a saver for me if used efficiently. Oh yeah, that, as you said, those that internship was actually a blessing, that guided me towards. I'm grateful for it. It changed my life entirely. So, Mikhailo, if you are watching this, he was my mentor. Thank you. Thank you very much.
What did you learn? How did it start? And you know, what type of skills did you take from being an engineer, aviation engineer, to tech art? How did that match?
Not really matching. I was learning nearly everything from scratch.
Yeah.
And the internship was mainly explaining me what I should learn. There were tons of resources already in the internet, for example, covering the rendering pipeline or the shaders, or dealing with math in game dev and so forth. But I wasn't sure what technical artist is all about. What should I learn? Where do I start? Those are the questions which stopped me from learning myself. I was quite fast was stuck, because I got lost in tons of various directions where tech art could go. Do you want to work with shaders? Okay, maybe optimizations, maybe procedural art, I don't know, VFX, whatever. So there are so many directions, and the mentor was guiding me towards this direction, and we were establishing the hard skill sections like math, or rendering pipeline, or shaders, or procedural, and so forth, and dedicated like few weeks of them, the topics to be covered, some extra resources, the presentations, internal presentations themselves, and I was trying to apply all the acquired knowledge in a single project. So, for example, I learned the VFX, I applied them in my pet project. Then the procedural landscape generation, okay, let's do it with Houdini, inject it there. So build it and repeat with hands to actually establish a solid foundation, apart from just knowing about it.
But also that's working important. On a project helps a lot, and having a mentor over you that's telling you like, yeah, that's a good practice, no, you did a mistake here, it also helps, right?
That's true. So with the time, I felt a bit more confident, and I was reached by other people like saying, how did you do it? We want the same. And there are no such resource online back in the day. I'm not sure if it is right now the case, at least at the affordable price.
No.
There are surely some courses that maybe like 3, 5, maybe even some university versions which brings the introduction to technical art. And I was thinking that, well, that's an opportunity for me to help the community and to speak about myself a bit. So I started to document my path, this internship. So what was mainly taught to me and what I used, I was documented. And it started not as actually the Udemy course, but the WordPress site with roadtotechart.com. I even remember it is not active anymore. There were some downgrades in that direction, because first of all, it was too hard to type a lot of unique text. You know, the copyright, we cannot simply use the same text which already present in one web page into another. Plus the monthly payments for the domain and for the server.
Of course.
So I gave up quite fast there. Also, what made me stuck is that I was trying to explain every stuff. So I started with rendering pipeline, and I went deep into each topic, like what vertex buffer do, what is the pixel depth, and so forth. Like I was not just saying, "Well, you should know the rendering pipeline. Please go ahead and learn it whenever it's already covered in details for the experts." No, I was trying to recreate it myself.
Good.
And first, it was hard for me to do, and second, it was very time-consuming. And so yeah, but even those days, like the website was nearly empty, apart from maybe few articles for the rendering pipeline and the skeleton of the upcoming lectures, let's say. Yeah, but even then, I received some feedback from the users, like saying, "Wow, that's great! Thanks you for doing that. Please keep up." And that helped me motivated to like a new breath. And the idea was to get rid of the site and start with Udemy instead. And it actually did work out quite well. The idea was that I'm not explaining the tech itself. I'm sharing what should be learned and giving a quick overview of each skill for like just to be prepared for the in-depth self-learning further on. Because there are multiple resources already. And it was like a guide, a compass or a map where to follow. And it worked really well. The acceptance of the course. I was surprised. I felt like, I haven't done enough. I just said,
So this
please,
is
people.
just to interrupt you here for a second. You're talking about how to become technical artist in game development course, right? That's your first course that you made, which was like a compass to, or a map, basically, to where to go, what to learn. I think I attended that course as well, and it
Oh,
was
really?
very, it's I'm very thankful to you because I it was really difficult to understand what a tech artist is, especially that it's such a like a broad title, because a technical artist could be a rigger. A technical artist could also be a shader, a shader person or a VFX person. They can also be a procedural generator or whatever. There's a lot of sectors there, and I think you broke it down very well, and you also gave a clear structure of like what is needed. Because for example, I was interested in procedural generation, and you said Houdini HDA, and then from there I was like, okay, I need to look this up because it's really interesting. And that's how I got into streaming my learning journey, which is a bit similar to how you started, but a bit different. It's just I just started because of you, basically.
Wow, that's the perfect word for me to hear. Thanks for the feedback. I mean, I have no words. I wasn't expected that the course would be would bring that impact. I received multiple messages in LinkedIn that the people landed a job. And again, it's not my work there. They did all the hard lifting. I
Of
just
course.
helped them to reach it out and to explain where to go.
I think a good metaphor here is the world is too big, right? You would not know how to go somewhere. Like now, if from the top of my head, I don't know how to go to Munich, for example. But if I put Google Maps, and your course is kind of like Google Maps in that sense, you're telling everybody like where things are and how to go, especially with a word like tech art. Like informations are not out there. There's no the ultimate guide for tech art, and it will teach you everything because that course will take 10 years to complete. It
Yes,
would need a lot of
exactly.
budget. But what you're telling in that course is like, here's the resources. Check this out if you're interested in that section of tech art. This is what tech art is, and I think it's very beneficial, honestly.
Right. Even in the end of the course, I've added the links to all the resources I used myself back in the days to learn, like to in-depth learning. I mean, so for anyone interested in making a next step, there is a document. Some resources are free, some are paid. Like But yeah, that was good, and the idea it triggered. There was nothing particular in the market, but so yeah, that worked out pretty well. But I felt guilty, like, for delivering something. Oh,
So of
that's the
course.
course.
Just gonna show the viewer. Yeah, go ahead.
By the way, that course, Road to the Card, I'm sharing with everyone who are just a fresh graduate for free.
Oh, huh? Cool.
That's the way to support the community. Yeah, please reach me out in LinkedIn or in comments here, and I will share it with
That's also from you, man. Very
you.
generous.
Yes, it's my pleasure to assist. I mean, the more community we have, the stronger it is. So why not?
Yeah. And so
We are not.
you felt like after How to Become a Technical Artist in Game Development course, you felt like you haven't done enough. And so what happened
That's
after
true.
that?
That's true. I felt like I was missing the hands-on practical experience for tech art. There were like two minor workshops in the How to Become to tech art role course, but they were like 10 to 15 minutes. I wanted to do something more because I wanted to create something which will teach some tech art skills, which could be put into the portfolio after all, or something that makes some use. And lately I've been dealing a lot with establishing pipelines, so I decided to try out creating the Python course for creating custom texture exporter for Substance Painter. And that stuff did work well. I spent way more effort there. It's like 7 hours of fully practical workshops where I need to speak, to type, and to think at the same time. It was not something which came really easy for me. But yeah, it did help for me to like fulfill the need of bringing something actually useful. It is establishing like the custom tool created in Python, which launched in Substance Painter, and it helps to during the export, it will make sure the user is establishing the proper name for all the assets he is exporting. Also, the files will be exported to the proper file location, and it is checking the resolution budgets for each texture.
Awesome.
So, naming convention, path location, and resolution budgets are covered in this course, as well as some working with the creating UI itself. Because a technical artist usually creates some small custom tools, and there are need some UI with buttons and checkboxes for the interaction.
Basically, this tool will help artists not to click on files, save as, going into like the checking of all the parameters. You're making their job easier because you know what the game needs, and it will pack export, right? Is that correct?
That's true, and also it helps to keep the project hierarchy healthy. So it's rather a kind of a pipeline tool to make sure that we are not creating a mess like the texture.png final version 2, final for sure. That stuff will be
I swear, final.
Exactly. And it will be placed in the expected location. So it will be shifted there, like a kind of a production tags. If you're familiar with the Unreal Engine tags, that's kind of similar approach there.
Would you say this course is friendly to people who have no idea what Python is?
Yes. I was even dedicating the whole section to the Python basics.
Cool.
So like the list, dictionaries, variables, functions, classes, and so forth, to prepare for people who have artistic skills, like who users of Substance Painter, for example. So yeah, that one was really user friendly for for non-technical people.
So what did you focus on tools for your first course? Would you say that's like the main skill needed, required for a tech artist?
Depending on which company you work on, which team size. So in indie company, the tech artist, everything at once. In big companies, the tech artist responsibilities are shifted towards some particular area. For example, the tools creation is one of them. It's just something I have experienced with lately, and I thought, well, that would be beneficial for most of them because I work with proprietary solutions, and you know, and it's not a lot of that I could apply outside of. So Substance Painter is an open, well, not an open source, but well-known solution, DCC. Digital content creation tool.
Yeah.
And Python as well. So that was my way to go.
That's awesome, man. Thank you. Thank you for doing that course. I don't think there's a lot of content out there in regards to that. So yeah.
I'd like to say that this course is a bit outdated. The thing is that I was creating it with the module which was called PySide 2 for the UI. And lately the Adobe updated the Painter and the Python used there as well, which leads to the problem that if you are following the course, it will not even be possible to deal with the PySide 2 module. There is a PySide 6 module, which nearly the same, but that's the common question which was asked by new students, and I've covered them already, so there are Q&A session and you find the ways how to deal with it. But it's on me. I need to update the course.
Got it. So that's also a responsibility for a person who's teaching online, is to check if the content is up to date, especially like with things like this that are technical. I see that with Houdini courses a lot, where like, this Houdini course has been made in version 17, and right now we're in 20 whatever, and there are just new tools, new solutions, and the older ones are updated. Yeah. And if you don't know that, you're just a beginner. It's going to be difficult to just follow on.
You will not find the exact node name, and or you will use them.
Yep.
Undesired way to deliver things.
I think like as a soft skill for a tech artist, and we'll go through the courses you made after that, the core skill as a tech artist is that you're willing to read, like go and research and see. Like you mentioned, for example, in the Q&A of your course, that's something everybody ignores, right? I usually never go there, right? But if I learn to not only research, but also like see if in the Q&A someone have mentioned that, then like that is something I guess you would teach people who are starting in tech art, is like look, read, research. Don't wait for someone to tell you.
Yes, especially for tech art. You never know which challenge waits for you tomorrow. So you can deal with multiple issues, and what you learned so far might not be enough for tomorrow.
Yeah.
So for that reason, it's quite crucial to not be stuck as soon as you realize, well, I don't know that.
I agree with you.
At the same time, so I call it the get stuff done approach, or GSD. So it's everything about delivering reliably, in time, and with an expected level of quality.
Yeah.
So the key point here is, you know, to assess own capabilities. It is fine for technical artists to not know everything at once.
Yep.
And you have to have enough courage to say, I don't know this. Especially if you follow but. Give me some extra time, and I will research. And it might take one day or two, but I will deliver. Just need some extra time. So do not get stuck as soon as you meet some challenge. It's quite important for a tech art and as a soft skill.
I think the main skill is, or the main thing is that you need to know, or you need. To be not avoidant of the things that you don't know, and just face forward, admit first, and like you said, and then add the but, I will learn it, and Because I think I, for example, mostly I stop with, oh, I don't know how to do this. And it's like, yeah, but if you like start learning Python, even the basics, you'll probably be able to, if I don't avoid it, and I have like this issue with avoiding things, I would have reached a better level by now. But yeah, I think that's why I do the podcast and I talk to different people and like I learn from you. Anyway, back to the courses. So after Substance Painter Automation with Python, you worked on this thing here.
Yes, it's for the perforce automation with Python.
So
I
what is
wasn't
that?
quite. Perforce is a version control system, which lets user to keep track of the file changes throughout the life cycle of the software or game development in our case.
Like a
In
Git.
other words, yeah, a Git. In the thing is that perforce is a bit more popular
Unreal.
For AAA or for game development, whatsoever, because it better handles the big assets, big data. Yes. So Git is, well, Git also has this large file storage or something like that feature. So it's fine to understand the concept of the version control overall, and either it is perforce or Git, it's just a matter of learning the UI or how things are called there. Is it commit or submit? You know, that's but overall it's nearly the same.
So what
So
is this course about? What is it automating?
it automating so imagine you have exported the files from Substance Painter using that custom tool we've created in the first lecture, first course. And they just lay down in your PC. But you need to work with Perforce or other GUI interface to actually submit it to server. So let everyone in the team know that you've made those changes and they will be available for you. So that course is automating the process of making sure the files are like registered in the server and ready to be submitted. So they are creating so-called the change list, which gathers all the changes you made in one place, giving them a description and preparing everything. So you just open the tool and click submit when verify that everything is fine.
Oh,
So
cool.
again, less user clicks.
Yeah. It's
Something for the pipelines.
it takes the tedious work out of submitting your changes and checking them out. So it's a tool that does that for you in a way because it is tedious and the human can miss one thing and then the submission or the commit might suffer from that. And then the person who has to do the merge of like the of your branch has to suffer too, and it's just like better have an automation that can do that than have like a
Yes.
person checking that.
Merging data assets is a hell whatsoever. So yeah, but that course also covers the exclusive checkout feature, which leads, for example, imagine you have a dot max scene in 3ds Max, and you want to make some modification in the asset which covers there, like I don't know, character or building a tree whatsoever, and there is no guarantee that someone else in the same time opens the same file and doing the same modifications, like maybe adding a new branch for, and your work will overlap with that. And there is a feature so-called like exclusive checkout, which lets only you exclusively work with that file and be sure that no one else is capable of making changes and avoid the conflicts further on.
Oh wow, that is really important, and I didn't know such a thing existed. I guess this type of knowledge is very needed in a big team, right?
Yeah, for technical artists, working with version control system is crucial because you're not only submitting files. Usually, when you are trying to investigate the issue, which is another soft skill, by the way, like to look for the root of the problem, You often need to go back in history for files and like to pick the previous version and check if the issue exists in that submit, maybe to identify the root cause. And being proficient in version control system for technical issues is also important, as I said, because you're not like a regular user who just submits. You're also the one who helps others submit and
Yeah.
solves their issues.
Yeah, that's a huge skill to learn, that's for sure. And it takes a lot of brain power, I feel, to go back to an asset that got created and then figure out what's going on. Just not to discourage a lot of people watching this, they want to be technical artists. This is a section of technical art.
It's a section, and I didn't know it back in the days. It is something you learn once you get into it. You
Absolutely.
just be aware of that feature exists overall, and its principles would be enough.
It's this thing, common sense versus what is not common sense to you. So, for example, tech art might have been a skill that programmers got into before artists got into, and at one point, it became a common sense to know what Perforce is or what Git is. But nowadays you have technical artists that are learning the skill from zero without any industry how to say any experience, which experience basically phased shaped tech art. If you like in the past, that no one woke up one day was like, oh, I think I will become a technical artist back in the day. I think it was a necessity and there was a need to it, and it just happens. And because of that, technical art is still protected with experience. But that is getting removed slowly, and I think people like you who are making content is helping out with that. So I guess like that course would be kind of a must, although might not seem like it's a must for a portfolio, but for work. Like if you got hired and then, the team got tired of you not getting what the Perforce is. It's definitely a course to recommend. Would you say so too?
I would say it is something really important. Overall, the automation of version control system integration is important to be present in your tool if you're creating some assets with it. Either you're exporting the data or maybe validating it to make it check out automatically, like to prepare the files for the submits. It's reducing minor clicks which user would need to do, and the less user clicks, the less chances to make some mistakes
Mistakes, yeah.
and things well organized. So yeah, I think that's a
Yeah.
good addition to all the tools which are producing data.
Another soft skill to touch on here is empathy, right? Technical artists kind of need to understand the artists that are working with the tools and how they think and be empathetic with them and not just create that tool that doesn't have a UI and it's a super user unfriendly. I think we're really the bridge in that.
Yeah, I call it broader, like communication and collaboration in a team. First of all, as you said, it is really important to build trust in a team. So to know that person, that technical artist, is a go-to person because he or she nearly knows everything in the project, starting from the in-game solutions to maybe some tooling, some digital content creation, maybe setting up the workstation overall, because we faced so many issues back in the days, and it is important for everyone in the team to know that there is nothing bad in asking for support, especially if you are struggling with that solution. The tech art or other like tool support specialists, I know, could have the solution out of the pocket already for.
And could have already faced the issue before with another
Exactly.
colleague or so. So the onboarding, I feel like we also help a lot with onboarding and like solving issues. But like you said, if you don't speak up and you feel shy or you think that you might looked at in a certain way because you have this issue, it's like, nah, don't let imposter syndrome control you. It's just better for everybody that if you found an issue to speak up because down the line that will save s just that much time, basically. Yeah.
It's nothing bad in saying, I'm stuck, please help me.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's other people in the team to solve your problems.
I think it's like a fire alarm, right? No one takes a fire alarm personally. Like, it's a fire alarm. There's a fire. Like, I'm not
Exactly.
offended that you're loud. You better be loud, or like an error message from a program, right, that tells you can't export because, or are you sure you want to rename this? Like, those things are important, and I feel like we humans really need to be able to break through the shyness and break through like the self-dependence or whatever, you know, just speak up a bit more. Okay, so that is for per force. Let's go to the next course. Are you ready?
Yeah, but I'd like to speak a bit more about
Okay.
communication and collaboration,
Sure.
since apart from just knowing that you exist and you know how to help people, you also produce some solutions as a technical artist,
Yeah.
and often they are automating something or like creating some tools. So it is important to document them, to speak about them as well, because even the most meticulously, glorious tool you've created, if no one knows about it, no one will use it.
Yeah.
So make sure it is well documented. It might be like a text, wall of text, plus some GIFs, like click zero there,
Yeah.
plus create a video showcasing how it works.
Yeah.
And moreover, it would be better to grab the whole team for like 15 minutes and do a quick show demo in live
Yeah.
and receive some questions.
Yep.
It's so often that it happens for me multiple times, like people were when the documentation is created, when I've posted multiple notifications in communication channels,
Yeah.
and then when doing like a live demo, they say, "Wow, I haven't heard of it." So that's
So cool. Yeah, I mean, some I'm a huge believer in like 15 minutes quick meetings, like, hey, come on, let me grab your attention, everybody. Here's what I here's this tool, or even just planning, like, even if it's just a planning thing, like, get what the art director really wants, because those 15 minutes, they can save you literal hours of work, which will just help the project. Like, invest time to cut time. That's how I look at it.
Perfect. Completely agree.
Actually, I'm giving a talk tomorrow about the same topic.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's
Wow.
about the talk is about how can you cut time on having stylized visual effects on your team. And stylized and not realistic, because realistic is kind of established. We all know what realistic is, but stylus sometimes has to do with like art direction, creative direction. And it's me just talking on like how can you improve that by time, and how can you avoid mistakes very early on. It's really about this: invest time to cut off time, and do early hire the VFX artist early on instead of hiring the VFX artist later on. Because like one of the misconception about hiring a VFX artist and saving money is that a lot of the do the mistake of hiring the VFX artist freelance at the last 30 days before shipping. It's like you cannot expect, yeah, you cannot expect it to work. It will work, but you know, you can't complain about like the quality, or if the game is not making any sense anymore, because like a lot of people see VFX as decoration and not as you know, it's the last time decoration, ah, it will look good. But VFX actually have a lot to do with the feel of the game and the soul of the game itself. Like, it's one of the main user experience or user interfaces that reflect your effect on the world, right? As a player.
That's a really important topic. I'm glad you will cover it. Oh yeah, pretty exciting.
Yeah, I will share the link for the call with you for the talk. It's online actually, it's not physical. So you could check it out. Okay, so we're moving on to the big data visualization for games using Elastic Stack. Or is Elastic Stack, yeah. Okay, I have no idea what that is. You have to explain it.
Yeah, I will try to explain it to you. So, set. might not look like the actual scope of technical artist, but as I said, you never know which assignment you will get next day. So for me, back in the days, I was requested to process the data of the development builds to monitor how they work. This course is covering the following. So we are learning how to gather the data from the game on example of Stack Obot Unreal Engine sample project. So we are gathering the session information, like who played the build, for how long, where did he go or she go, maybe have they meet any like interaction points, maybe how many enemies they killed and so forth. And then that's the big data. That's imagine it. For me, it was like one user, and I was generating with Python to simulate that amount of thousands of files. And then when we gather the data, we need to process it. So it is not like a wall of text, but some visually understandable graphs, which could help to understand the, for example, the information. Either the game session popularity increases, like our player spending more time in game, or what's the average play time per session. And apart from the session information, I was also covering the performance information, which is also quite important during the game. So for example, what was the average FPS for the build version number and so forth. And you can see that, for example, the degradation of the performance, where the five builds before the average FPS was 60, and now it's 45. Well, maybe something went wrong, and some changes were not optimized, and we realize this in advance. So so it is not left for the final day when we are trying to ship the project and realize, wow, we have performance issues. So that's a way to track data during the development process. And the last thing was a quite fancy one. So the session information and the performance information were purely graphs, bars, and like numbers. But I also visualized where the player go on the minimap. So I was tracking the path the players were following and visualizing it on actual map, which is a top view of the game world. And with the trace, we were able to see where and who go to, for example, maybe where is the common place users spend most of the time, where either it's a point of interest or no, and so something like visually pleasant. I'm not sure it's really, really important. We could also visualize not only the past, but imagine the places where the game has crashed.
Oh,
And
yeah, big time, sure.
there, or recording the event of the place where the FPS has dropped below the threshold, like below the 30 FPS, or something went wrong there. Maybe there was an explosion, maybe there is some unoptimized asset placed. So that also like gives some hints, but the way the players are moving is just a fancy visualization I like to develop.
That's like a
But
feature
no.
that makes it in the game, but all the tools that you make is to help the to reass like find the issues basically within development.
Yes,
That's cool.
to check them in advance, like to not let them stay in the development build for months and then be like a real problems.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing what one can do with just like the knowledge. Would you say like all those three courses after how to become technical artist in game development, would you say like beginner friendly? So if you took like the Substance Painter one, you could easily follow up on the automation with Perforce and then dive deeper. Like, are there levels? Like that you could go one after the other?
Yes. In terms of Perforce, I would recommend starting with the Substance Painter because, as I said, I'm making a step back and explaining the basics of Python. In Perforce automation with Python, I'm saying that the basic knowledge of Python is required already. So it is better to come after Substance Painter to the Performer.
But however, if you
And
already have knowledge in Python, you could attend the
yeah,
course
that should be
definitely.
enough.
But they kind of build up on each other, like you like a steps.
In for example, in I'm trying to make them unique in a way, even though it's still a perforce. Well, I mean, it's still Python in both of them, but I'm developing UI for the Substance Painter, like manually line by line. And in the perforce automation with Python, I'm using approach of using the designer application, which lets you build the UI with the widgets, with the blocks, which you can access with, but not the line of code. So that's another approach of building the graphical user interfaces for custom tools.
How much would you say of the courses that you already made is something that you're faced with work? Like how much percentage if you like is it a 20% of your task, 40% of your task? How much of that?
You mean how time-consuming was
So
creating the code?
how many times or how often at your work are you asked to create the big data tools, the Perforce tools, or a Substance Painter type of tool? How much of percentage of your work do you think those tools are taking of your work?
For me, it's like nearly 50%, because even though if you can create this tool quite fast, if you're in the middle of development process, the tool might build up as the project goes. For example, if we check the Substance Painter automation with Python, it supports like multiple asset types, exports like weapons, characters, and props. But maybe later on we would deliver another type of asset that again needs to be validated there, define it the resolution budgets, or maybe the naming convention. So delivering the tool is one step, which could be quite fast. I do like the process of creating a new tool. If you are starting fresh, you can think of the structure, you can build it, modules, all the stuff which like systemic approach. But then goes the support process, and it might be endless because the feature request appears, someone needs someone finds the tool, or maybe the DCC for which tool was created, it evolves. As the example with the Substance Painter, PySide 2 module, which was used to build the UI, is not available anymore for version of Painter. So we need to update it to PySide 6, which again, work could be done. So, yeah, delivering tools is quite fast, but supporting them is nearly endless.
How much would you say, or let's reframe the question here. Your job is probably known to you best on a team. You know your job the best. How do you communicate time estimations with producers? How is that done? Like, do you have to argue that you need more time on a tool, or is it do they understand what type of work you're doing?
I might be really lucky with the team, but they do trust me. So if I say it's a 2 week estimate for the work, they have no question. As long as it is fitting maybe their budget as well as reasonable, and I'm delivering with time. So usually it is me who is planning and delivering themselves. So,
So,
but it might be different on different seniority levels.
of course.
So for the junior person, you cannot say, please bring me the tool to solve this issue. You need to break the tasks to a simple executable steps and follow them carefully. So it really depends on the level of seniority.
Yeah, that's also another thing, like with tech art, because mostly a team would have one tech artist, maybe two. There's not a lot of tech artists on a team. It's not a usual thing. So I feel like we're missing that mentorship part of it. And your Udemy courses come in mind here because, like, if there is a way I could get the quick answers of what's a good habit, what's a bad habit, learn the soft skills right early on, the better it is. It is for us because we lack that team structure that allows us to have someone maybe above us or with more experience. Because usually they are the lead VFX artist somewhere else entirely. They're hired, they're needed, right? Because it's their skill is very much in demand. So talking about soft skills, what would you say are the most important soft skills for a technical artist?
So we've covered already communication and collaboration. I believe that's one of them. The GSD approach, if you remember, the get stuff done, to say that I don't know this, for technical artists it's really important as we cannot know everything. But apart from it, for example, well, looking for the root. It is again fancy word, but for something which means try to identify the root cause. To explain it better, imagine a scenario when you, as a technical artist, got assigned to the task saying there was a texture resolution over budget for that weapon asset. Imagine it could only accept 1K resolution texture and that weapon has 2K, which is over budget and should be fixed. So the simple and not ideal solution would be to manually update the resolution of that texture and say we are done. But looking for the root mindset, it's about asking why it happened until you identify the cause of it. So someone was able to export this texture in 2K or was able to submit it. There were no validation whatsoever. So the issue is not exact case of that 2K weapon. The issue that the pipeline is not preventing artists exporting textures above the budget, you know? So the preferable solution would be to fix the pipelines so artists are not able actually to export 2K textures for the weapons further on instead of manually fixing that single asset. Oh well, yeah, you still have to, even though providing the pipeline solution, you still have to fix that one minor texture, but it also makes sure that no further occurrences of such issues will come. So that's what I mean by looking for the root, to identify the root and prevent it happening again.
There are 2 points here I want to discuss with you. One if one is It seems that your job, or like a technical artist's job, is to be a firefighter sometimes, put down fires. So you need a support. So you need to schedule some support time in your week, I guess, kind of like an IT job. And the other half or the other part of the job is creating tools. But how do you balance between? So say you need to make a tool in 2 weeks, but then 10 problems come to you. Do you have like one day a week where you solve problems? Do you have like Mondays is just to solve problems? Everybody collect your issues here in that channel. I'll check on Monday. Is that how you do it? How do you deal with that?
That might be preferable, but I do like to at least take a look on person's issue, especially if it's a blocker for them and they're stuck and not able to deliver their day-to-day work. But if they like identify this minor issue, which like a warning or not an actual error, it might be like log it into the time tracking tools, and on the backlog, once I'm free, I will take care of it. Might be today or next week or even next, I don't know, month, and so forth. And it's all about the priorities. If we are delivering, if working together on delivering feature for some demo scene, and it should be done by the end of Friday, and person simply cannot export the data to or cannot make it appear in engine, which is also quite common stuff, because for artists they used to work within the digital content creation tools. You can imagine the proficient artists are creating the meticulous models or textures, materials, whatever VFX. They export them, and what to do then? They're not yet integrated in the project. So that's also common work for technical artists to make sure the stuff made in DCCs is actually integrated and be as expected, so visually pleasant and not performance-wise difficult to handle by engine.
Oh, got it. So asset implementation would be also a job of a technical artist
Yeah,
then.
for sure. And I believe we haven't covered a lot in terms of assessment for tech art. I mean, what can be done by tech art
You mean
is
like
please.
we didn't cover generally, like as tech artists, or in this podcast?
No, I mean, every tech art is responsible for a different area. You bring three different technical artists and ask them what they do in their day-to-day job, and their replies most likely will be different.
Absolutely.
So the amount of responsibilities is huge. I mean, we haven't covered all that technical artists could do, and in my course, I also haven't covered all the topics that are required for proficient tech artists. For example, I haven't covered VFX whatsoever because I was afraid of it. Back in the days, I wasn't quite advanced there, and to be able to speak freely in the topic, I decided to rather skip it and leave it for like to do. I mentioned it in each lecture. I'm mentioning the list to do further on, and there were links to learn VFX, please, by yourself.
So how many courses are you planning? If you like, are you planning four more, five more, infinite number more?
I will be honest with you. I'm quite disappointed by the perception of the practical courses. I spent way more efforts in delivering them, but they're not as popular as the How to Become Technical Artist. Like, to compare, I have nearly 1,500 enrollments altogether, and nearly more than 1,000 is for the first course. The rest are like 50, 100, but not much. And that's something I can understand, because people want to have a direction. Maybe the efficient technical artist will be able to do courses without my help.
So
They
I do consultancy for online academies and online how to say online schools, and I can tell you right off the top of my head, the issue here is packaging, especially the title. The first one that sold very well is literally a Google search: how to become a technical artist, and that's how I got into your course. The other ones are very specific, so.
Yeah, that's the point. I don't want to mislead people, and
Oh no, you don't have to, but like one of the examples of how you could title it is make your first project as a technical artist and then the rest of the title.
I see what you mean.
See?
I see what you
Like,
mean.
yeah.
I was
Anyway.
focused on someone who was already knowing what they are looking for. Like, I want to automate the subsonator. Okay, here you go, the course. So I do have a plan for the next course. I can spoiler it to you and for the viewers right now. It will be linked to Unreal Engine again, but the scale will be huge. I'm going to work to show how we can build the real landscape areas of real world. So imagine creating your town, for example. I will be using the help of an external plugin which has free access. So my idea is, again, I'm trying to create something that doesn't require extra payment for users to access. So, for example, well, the painter wasn't the case, because painter is paid, but it has 1 month free trial.
Seven
The
days, I
perform
think, right? Is it a 1 month trial or 7 days? I'm not sure. Go ahead.
Back in the days, it was 1 month. But Adobe is greedy, so I won't be surprised if it is actually 1 week right now.
One fun challenge could be to make the same course but for Material Maker, which is made in Godot. So
Yeah,
that could be cool.
I have a course structure for the designer, substance designer automation with Python,
Cool.
but again, that topic that I want to create something which already accessible by many,
Makes sense.
and substance designer automation API is hidden only within enterprise license, which is a
Oh.
huge payment monthly.
No, no,
And
no.
I could assume it won't be as popular just because it is not accessible by anyone.
You're right there. You're right there. But like Blender and open source programs could pro like Blender is super popular, right? Krita, things like that, that everybody could like literally all around the world could download. Like I'm thinking about countries like Syria where I come from, you know, sanctions. We don't have credit cards, you know what I mean? Like, but we might be able to download Krita and learn from there. But like countries like that where you can't even use anything, I feel like Blender and open source is really helping out there. I wanted to cover something with you, another point when it comes when you say like look at the root, right? Are you thinking because like in IT we studied to look for a problem, like you said, to the root, but there's seven layers, like a pyramid, right? There are seven layers. There's the user interface, there's the application, there's blah blah blah, and network, and other layers. I forgot them. Don't take my IT license away. I just forgot it. So the first layer is the user. We're always told, I think, to look from top to bottom. Do you do the same? Do you look top to bottom? Like maybe the user clicked the wrong button and then you start looking deeper, or do you just like stop when you find a solution? How do you go, I guess, from bottom to top or from top to bottom?
When I receive some issue report, I usually ask for the steps to reproduce, to actually see how the person meet that problem. That answers most of the questions already. But seeing the problem is one thing, and realizing where it come from is another topic. So it's often it's not always if we are speaking of example of tools, custom tools in the DCCs, it is not often your tool problem. Often you have a dependencies of other modules which you import. For example, the PySide 2 model which used for UI. With the recent update of Painter, it, as I said, might not be just available anymore. And usually the red text shows everything. I mean, red text and error message. It brings the call stack where the actual issue came from, and that's the starting point from the investigation. Once it is solved, I'm trying to break it one step further. So, okay, it crashed that way, but what if I do a bit fancier steps? Will it stay active still? Okay, it is fine. So I believe that something good enough is better than a amazing, especially for the tools which are created by technical artists. We are not caring much about performance. For example, if it compared to the gameplay code
Of
which
course.
happens in real time, so if it's a matter of we are moving a safer way, but extra checks, but it cost us half a second to load the tool, it is fine. I
It's
mean,
fine.
the user will not notice either it's 1 second, half a second. But we are extra checking everything, if everything all right, please report and bring the readable user-friendly message. What try accept all those stuff. So in that case, we are lucky. We can make things slow, and still user will not notice.
All
So
right.
for that case, the Python is perfect.
All right. So, what type of sort of side projects do you feel like you're, not just work, but something on the side you're doing that keeps you going? Like I think you mentioned Unreal Fellowship, Games 2025.
I was part of Unreal Engine Fellowship. It is, if for everyone awareness, it's like an Epic Games internal intensive online bootcamp, which lasts for 3 weeks. It is for designed for people who already have experience in game development, but not within Unreal Engine. So my case is the perfect fit there, because I work with a proprietary solutions. It was glorious. We were 50 people all around the Europe. There was a dedicated group before us for the American part, their region, because cannot same due to the huge time difference between. So European area, as I said, 3 weeks, 50 people, applications were, as I remember. So I was quite lucky to actually be selected. It is free of charge. We are not getting paid, and it's not like work in Unreal or in Epic Games whatsoever. It's just a training session, no collaboration whatsoever. We were told back from the beginning, like how to navigate in the Unreal Engine, how to and up to PCG stuff, to Niagara, to sequencer, all to packaging and building the game. So 9 hours a day, workshops, lectures, dedicated time with your mentor and teacher assistant to solve your problems, and in the same time you're developing the project. It was, as I said, quite intense, because I was initially expecting to like to get some few hours of knowledge and then work project. We were told that we will be asked to, based on the knowledge we gain, to create a project ourselves. There was a dedicated topic for arcade machines. By the way, those games, moving ahead, we've created, they were available in the Unreal Engine Fest in Orlando, like 1 month ago it was. There were dedicated cabinets with a PC hidden inside, with a joystick and few action buttons, and our games we've developed there were all the guests of this event, and they were able to play the game. So that was a huge motivation for us to actually, you know, because that project we've developed was not left in shadows. It was accessible for other people, and we were, wow, we make it really. We crunched a lot. I worked in evenings. I took a 3 weeks vacation at my regular work to
That's
dedicate the
cool,
full
yeah.
time there. It wouldn't be possible actually if
No.
I really wanted to. They said us to us on the like introduction session, like please take a long sleep, say goodbye to your family and friends, because we will be together here for quite a while. And it was the
Yeah.
case. I really grateful for that opportunity. Before that, I was quite afraid of Unreal. I knew what it is. I was able to do some stuff there, but I never covered in depth. Well, you know, there were like few minor tries here and there, but nothing in particular. And that, at the end of the project, I felt like Unreal is my home. I got used to all the controls. I know how to solve all the issues. Even though it was Blueprint only, so no C++ involved, we solved everything we needed. So no blockers. With
Cool.
the help of assistants, it's a really, really great experience. So I do recommend to everyone interested in it, apply for it next year if it happens to be conducted again, because I've heard it might not be.
Oh, let's hope it will be, because it sounds like a boot
I could
camp
imagine.
to launch your knowledge in Unreal.
I could imagine it is quite costly for Epics to host this event because we do have guests, we dedicated speakers,
Wow.
the assistants. Well, they work full time there. They are available within hours. They are conducting lectures and workshops. Yeah,
But you, they also
that's.
get something back from it. You get like indie developers who are now fully integrated in the engine that they want to promote, right? It's all part of the program. But how would you say, like, you went from zero to a hero or 0 to 15%? What do you feel like your level now in Unreal?
I wasn't zero, but it was like there were people like imagine the first lecture where we were told how to move the cube, and the first question after the lecture is, what do you think about systemic gameplay features integration in the project? Well, what? It was just the first lecture. We were learning the controls and stuff. And they are asked about the gameplay features already. So yeah,
Wow.
that's some people were way too advanced to like to consider I'm cured to learn Unreal. Some of them were teaching Unreal
Wow.
in their local spaces. Maybe they went for some, portfolio
Sure.
that they were part of it. For me, I went maybe from I got confidence in it, I would say. So it is not stressful for me anymore to put my hands in it and start prototyping, and I would achieve what I want. So I can see things already there, I realize how the logic is built, how the hierarchy is there between the different parts of the systems. Yeah, that did help me a lot. I think it's great. What also I saw in the fellowship is a great community. It's a way to build the networking. We are still those 50 people. We are on a Discord chat. We are sharing our work. Some of people pushing further their projects to actually be released as a standalone game for Steam. Yeah. I don't have such plans for my game. It was something I've developed. I'm grateful, and the more I like, sorry, the more I see it, the less I like it. Because I started noticing here and there some places to be improved, and now I know how they should be done. And ideally, I would rather recreate it from scratch to make it more systemic and grow further apart from like few levels. But yeah.
Yeah, well, you never make your dream game the first game. Everybody says learn, just make a game, then make another game, and then another one. Just learn the systems, learn, and then your dream game should be like your 15th game that you make, because you will just be less frustrated, and you will not hate that game. Like you just said, it's the thing with like cooking. Cooking analogies can also be used for game development. Like, your first burger will probably suck, and imagine you're stuck with that burger. You're still trying to make it work with sauces, and it doesn't matter, man. It's burned. What are you trying to do here? And the concept is like, make a burger and then throw it away, then make another one, then throw it away, and until you really get good at it, and then you can open a restaurant. Anyway, so we wanted to talk about working under war. Is that something you're still comfortable with?
We could, sure. I live in Ukraine. We are at war, and we still deliver day to day. Not only we as like people who work in IT, but people outside as well. And considering me, I'm not as affected, at least because I'm staying at home, and which is a relatively safe place. But still, we are living under constant, huge level of stress. Every night, there might be explosions nearby, and you never know. You don't need more than one explosion to hit you hard. One is enough, and that constant level of stress, it is something we're not quite comfortable at the beginning, but actually work helped us to get rid of the reading the constantly the news, because we cannot affect much what is happening around apart from like donating on a regular basis, supporting whatever we can. But reading the news isn't helping. When you are busy with something, when your head outside of the problems, which you are not under control, it helps to I started working like maybe within 3 weeks after the war started, and it did help me to stay healthy overall. So the lack of sleep due to the constant stress, there are air warning alerts, and sometimes you wake up and find at least a few walls that make you feel a bit safer than staying like near the windows, for example, because all of the sharp edges which might penetrate you. At some moment there were electricity cutoffs, and
Of
they
course.
were quite severe.
Yeah.
That affected us as people who work online quite drastically. So nowadays, my home is so well equipped, so I could stay online for days.
That's good.
My internet will be working. There are multiple blocks with power, which can feed the PCs, all the other electronic units. So the thing is that people are adaptable to everything,
I know.
including war.
Yeah.
We used to it already, and it's quite scary to admit, but it is what it is. But I work with multiple studios all around the world, and I want to say that I feel support from them. No, never there was a case like of, oh wow, you haven't come to that meeting, but it was very important. They realized that we might not be available even during the working hours, the conditions we are at in our location. So we felt support from it, and it also helps to be on track, to realize that we have that bandwidth of, we could work maybe a few hours later, but stay in bed for the morning to rest from the stressful night. So that's something we do appreciate, and that's great that we have that opportunity to be agile in that sense.
It's a huge topic, and someone who comes from Syria, I can feel you. Similar experiences at a younger age for sure. And yeah, like you said, one bomb is enough to do its damage, even if it doesn't hit you. And I just hope this situation gets better soon, and everybody could live their lives and not worry about politics anymore. I really hope that is soon. But it's interesting how like much the human can adapt to conditions like that, and there's always some solution, and there's always like some support which always shines the light on what's important, and that we have each other. That we don't just fight, but we could also support each other, which, and it's a choice, right? Both is a choice. Hurt someone is a choice. Help someone is also a choice. And it's nice to see that the majority of people actually help, in my experience. Not everybody wants to do you harm, which I think is, it's good.
That's true, completely true. And just once again, I'm really grateful for the army forces of my country to keep us protected and be able to live our lives. From our side, we are helping with donations, with some support from not only money helps, but mostly that's the value which helps us to keep borders
You should
protected.
definitely send a fundraiser or something that I could put on the link below to help y'all. See
Yes,
whoever
I'd
hears this.
love to, like United 24, for example.
We'll put that in the link in the description definitely.
That would be very, very cool.
Yeah, so listen, it's been great having you on. Is there anything that you would still like to add that you would like to discuss or promote with the viewers?
I'd like to thank you for inviting me. I mean, really, you did multiple times. I still don't feel like I'm proper fit here compared to the level of guests you have had before. But you insisted, so here I am. Again, thanks for having me. Please note that all the courses, they are available with a huge discount on the Reddit, on my profile link. Use them instead of buying directly on Udemy. In that way, you're cutting 67% of the total revenue from me to Udemy. And the Road to Tech Art course is always available for free for fresh graduates or people who were laid off, which is also quite frequently. Like, as you've seen recently, the Blizzard introduced the 10% layoffs, which is wow. So, yeah, I'm here to support. Oh, don't forget that every student of the Road to Tech Art course is receiving not only the information how to deal with the tech art role, but also my support constant. And I'm also offering a free of charge interview test interview for tech art. It's I've mentioned it multiple times in the course and within the course itself. I was surprised that only two people within more than 1,000 asked to conduct an interview. So don't be shy. I wish I had such opportunity back in the days when I was trying to. Oh, yeah. Don't hesitate.
That's definitely an opportunity there. I forgot to ask you one question, which comes from one of the most active follower of my stuff. It's called Sprawa. He's from Poland. He wants to ask you about job security and AI for tech art.
You mean either AI will take over our work?
I personally don't believe so, but like that is the question. Let's see.
Not at all. If you ever try to ask ChatGPT, for example, for helping you build a custom tool in the same Painter, for example, even though if you specify the whole API for the Painter scripting, it will fail badly. It will link you to the not existing functions, just guessing that they exist. And I gave up using it for research quite fast. So be sure the tech art role is quite secure. We are solving problems, and it is something unique in an industry and will always be on demand.
Honestly, even if it goes that far, I feel tech art is that role that could use it to their advantage. Like take Comfy UI, for example, as a tool that can be used. I see a lot of. I'm an anti-AI myself because of the way they steal the art and things like that. But whenever I see a Comfy UI solution for like texturing, I'm like, that's pretty cool. I wonder how that works, but I never get to learn it. But yeah, I feel like. Our role is a bit better protected than because generally we have our eggs in different baskets, and if one basket crashes, we are kind of good to venture into tech or understanding like how GPUs work and how the AI is operating, and we could dive into that if we want to. Well, listen, man, I don't want to take much of your time. It's been an hour and a half. I think that's the longest so far. But I really
Hey.
enjoyed talking to you.
Great. It was a really pleasure to be around. Yeah, take
Awesome.
care.
Wait. We'll talk to viewer
Oh.
a little bit.
Okay, I'm here.
Yes. We'll talk to you also privately after that. But I'm just gonna pivot to the viewers here and say thank you for watching this. And this is Jack the Generalist, your host. This is the Generalist Podcast. And yeah, if you liked it, leave a like, subscribe. If you have any questions, I'll let you know. Just drop them in the comments, and yeah, I'll see you in the next one. All right, bye everybody.